Welcome to Career Tools. This week, planning for resume improvement, part two. The questions this cast answers are, what do I do to improve my resume? How can I improve my resume? And what opportunities can I take to improve my resume?
If you're a director or HR leader and you'd like some R&R in 2019, you ought to focus on the manager tools R&R, results and retention. Respected professional print recently discusses the hot job market and suggests organizations may be in jeopardy of losing key talent. Do your managers know how to build relationships and communicate with their directs in such a way that they retain the right people? At our on-site effective manager training, we'll work with up to 30 managers with actionable models to provide organizational measurement. To learn more, contact us at maggie@manager-tools.com.
Kate, last week we started talking about how to improve your resume in order to make it easier for you to find another job or to get a promotion or whatever you need a resume for in the future. So if people haven't listened to last week, they should listen to that first because it makes more sense. But basically what we're trying to do is think about things that we might want to do now in order to make sure that we have a really good resume for when we need to use it. And we've been through thinking about our next move, thinking about what skills and experiences we need to have had, looking for the opportunities to do those. And now the next part of when you get those opportunities is to measure your progress. Because if you don't measure your progress, you can't put it on your resume, because things on resumes should be quantified. Quantification is way more powerful. If you say, I wrote marketing plans, that's one thing. But if you say, I wrote 5 marketing plans and they increased the sales of the products by 10%, it's way more powerful. And if you have a list of quantified achievements like that on your resume, it's just really powerful. And it really reads as someone who not only has achieved those things, but also understands what drives a business and what's important and what to measure and how to change those things. So it really says a lot about you if you have a list of quantified achievements. And if you want to quantify them, you have to begin at the beginning by measuring.
Yeah, we have to pay attention to the things that we're doing and how they could be measured and essentially what their impacts are, which can be hard just in terms of day-to-day. When you think about your day-to-day work, thinking about the impacts of it can be difficult because you're way down in the weeds. And, you know, we're going to think about what we can measure so that when we're way down in the weeds, we don't have to kind of come up all the time. We can start out knowing what we're going to look at, what we're going to count, what metrics we're going to take. And that way, on a day-to-day basis, we'll be able to do our work, but also contribute to those metrics that'll help to make our resume helpful and useful to us in the future. Because, of course, it's our forward progress with our resume that's important to this conversation. So when we're finding opportunities, we really want to start measuring from the beginning and not change our measurements. We want to look at the work that we're doing and say, okay, I'm going to measure this. And, you know, we're going to think about it, of course. It's not just, oh, I'll take a guess at this. But we're going to measure that one thing and we're going to keep that measurement. We're going to stick to it. We might find, because often it's true, that there are several opportunities that don't pan out the way we want. And so we've wasted counting or measuring. And those will pale in comparison to the opportunities that did pan out and you didn't count. Most of us don't count a lot of the things that we're doing as we do them. I can think of 4 or 5 things that I do each week that I don't count, mostly because if I wasn't thinking about my resume within the future, I would just consider it my day-to-day job. Things like customer service tickets.
Yeah, that's exactly what came to my mind. I don't know how many customer service tickets I answer in a week, but that would be a really good thing to count, part because it's a quantity, so that it's an easy thing to count, and it also because it's an easy thing to count how successful you are, because you either have customers who send you a note and say, thank you so much, you answered my question, or you have people who say, you didn't answer my question and I'm not going to carry on buying something from you, or I'm not going to carry on using your service. So you can count, I closed 50 customer service tickets and 48% of them, the customer was satisfied. And it's a really easy thing to count.
Yeah. It's funny. We both thought of that probably because we both process so many customer service tickets.
Which always amazes people. Do you get that? People say, I can't believe I'm talking to the Wendy, which always makes me feel embarrassed. But everybody in Manager Tools answers customer service tickets. Nobody is above it. And I think that surprises people sometimes. Even Mark and Mike answer customer service tickets.
They do, yeah. Yeah, we all interact with the people who listen and write it and things like that. So we're not that far away, guys, in case you're wondering.
Yeah, right.
And that might be something we would count because it makes sense. And it's easy to count, I think, too.
Exactly. And sometimes it's difficult to find things to count or find the measure of something. So just choose the best measure that you can think of and stick to it. Because you can't make a comparison if you don't have data that you can compare. So for example, if I counted the number of podcasts, if I started by counting the number of podcasts I wrote, and then later I changed it to, I'm going to count the number that we record, I can't compare those two things because they're so far apart in the process. There's a whole bunch of things that happen between writing and recording. And so they're not comparable. Customer service is a really good one. How many people were happy? You can count increase in sales. You can count reduction in time is also a good one. So if there's a process that is currently taking 2 days and you get it down to 1 day, you would probably do that over time. So let's say it's a monthly process. And the first month it will take 2 days. And the next month it will take 2 days minus 15 minutes because you work out how a little bit to make it faster. But over a year, you probably get it down to a day and a half or a day. Even if it turns out that the time isn't the most relevant thing about whatever it is you're counting that process, it doesn't matter too much that it's not the best measure. The fact that you measured it is important. And it doesn't need to be something that the company is counting. So you could count lines of code or the number of bugs that you have in your code. And maybe the company doesn't count that. Maybe the company has some other measure of whether or not coders are doing their job. That's okay. It doesn't have to be what the company is counting. And nor does it have to be super accurate. There's something else that often high C's worry about. If I've worked with people and I'm doing their resume and they have some customer service interaction and I say, how many times has a customer complained about you? And they say none, because they didn't, because the people I work with are awesome. And I say, okay, 100% customer satisfaction. And they say, you can't say that. And I said, yes, I can, because nobody complained about you. That's 100% customer satisfaction. So it doesn't, you know, for some people, it feels a bit disingenuous. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be super accurate. It just has to be kind of accurate in the aggregate.
I think, too, it's important to remember that these things have implications over time. And so if you're working on some improvements and things like that, the changes that you see, they're going to be farther reaching. So even if you're thinking, well, I don't know that this was, you know, this big of a reduction or something like that, over time, those are even going to increase. So you're only measuring for a finite amount of time, which means that you might even have bigger implications of what you did because it's going to go on without you, right? Or past you. So our guidance here is that you should choose the best measurement that you can think of and stick to it. And if later, you know, something comes up that you can also count, we can add that. But we don't want to remove the original count. It's kind of a funny analogy. It's kind of like dieting, right? If you were to start a diet, often one of the things that people count is calories. Or there's other things like there's points and things like that. So I think that some companies do. And you can count calories. And that's a great measure. And then over time, I think there's some additional things that people can count like fats and sugars. And those are additional measures. But you don't stop counting calories. It's just the second measurement is a little bit more specific. And so we keep both because, of course, all of those things contribute to the health of your body and things like that. So it's a weird analogy.
The calories that you take in is not actually a perfect measure of what your body is going to do because bodies are weird and have plateaus and do all sorts of weird things. Like if you drink more water, you lose more weight, which makes no sense in my own head. because you're taking on board more stuff, but it has no calories, and yet it just doesn't make sense to me. So calories are not a perfect measure of what will happen to your weight or the way you feel or anything, but it's a really good measure. It's a reasonable one to use. So actually, I think that's a really good analogy.
I feel like some of my analogies are kind of odd. When we talk about interviewing, I always talk about pecan pie, which is interesting analogy. Anyway, so we're going to count. We're going to start counting with one thing. And of course, these measurements don't have to be formal. We're keeping track for ourselves, and we're counting our own progress and the things that we're influencing. And we're going to try to choose measurements if we can, if we have the opportunity, that affect revenue or cost or time. And the reason for this is because these are really powerful measurements on a resume, because of course they affect the bottom line of the company. If as an accounts clerk, you count the number of days it takes to complete month end, and hopefully that recedes over time, much like your example, then that's more efficient, right? And so we often can do those things like that. And of course, those efficiencies can contribute to us spending less money. If it takes less time, it costs the company less to get that work done. And maybe we can count materials or something like that, right? There's other things we can count.
One of our listeners who sends me emails quite often works upgrading HVAC. Hi, Rob. So maybe he spends time explaining to customers what they need and therefore getting additional sales for the company. Even though sales isn't his job, he's an installer as far as I remember. You know, if you're on site and the customer has bought X and you can see that they also need Y, and you have a conversation with them and say, hey, you need Y and this is why, and that results in a sale, you get credit for that on your resume, even though it's not, sales isn't your job. You can say, I increased sales, or I sold so much. Maybe you can work faster or use different materials to achieve the same effect more cheaply. Often we buy software or services. Maybe you bought Microsoft Office Suite for all the people in the company, and then later you decided, hey, this is expensive, but we can use the Google Business Suite and it's cheaper, or we can all go to Gmail and it's free. So over time, often we find better solutions to things that are cheaper, and all of those you get credit for. And if you're really struggling to think of something, either go to the forums on the website or email us and we'll try and think of something for you. So the next part is, when you've been doing your measurement, now we're going to upgrade your resume.
Yeah, we're going to upgrade our resume. Getting the result that we're looking for is only the first part of improving the resume, because once we have the result, we do have to create a new bullet on our resume, which represents it. And accomplishment bullets are a really important part of a resume. We use a formula to create them. So they're pretty simple in terms of the formula, and we're going to share that with you guys. The accomplishment bullet formula is verb, subject, number, method. Simple, right?
It's really easy.
It's really easy. Once you get the hang of it and you've done it a bunch of times. A really good example of this is, increase sales 10% by implementing a customer follow-up program. So in this example, we have the verb, increased, subject, sales, the number, 10%, and then the method, implementing a customer follow-up program. So those are the four parts, right? Verb, subject, number, method.
One thing that people want to do is give a lot of description. So they might, instead of implementing a customer follow-up program, which is five words, they will say, by contacting CEOs at area hospitals in the Tennessee area or something. Or sometimes, often, IT people want to put the actual software or the stack that they used. And you don't need any of that. Your resume should be headlines, not the story. What you want is for someone to read it and go, hey, that's really interesting how they did that. I'd like it if they did that for our company. I want to talk to them about it. And then they call you in for an interview and you get to talk about it. So don't try and give them everything on your resume. Give them enough to make them interested and invite you for an interview. And having this new bullet that you've just created on your resume is kind of only step one. Or maybe we're on step two by now, because we did the thing and we measured it. Then we created a resume bullet. And now you have to practice talking about it, because unless you do, it's really hard to give a good interview answer. I often find when I'm writing speeches for Toastmasters, I'll write something, and then when I read it out loud, my mouth doesn't make those shapes. It sounds, it looks really good on the page, but I can't say that word if I'm nervous, or I can't make the sentence work. I can't make it flow when I try and say it out loud. So practicing your interview answers out loud and practicing so that you can talk about that accomplishment in a way that's easy to listen to and easy to understand, that's your next step.
And especially because you're going to be nervous in any interview situation. So having that idea of what you're going to say, knowing what you're going to say, is quite helpful because you'll feel comfortable if you're doing something you already know how to do because you've been practicing it. You'll already know how to say the answer. And so you'll be able to say it more easily, even though you're nervous, right? And the most basic interview question is, tell me about a significant accomplishment. The questions don't always sound like that. And they can also be boiled down to that basic question. So imagine you're asked that question and you want to tell the interview about the increase in sales that you've created. Well, a good answer would be, I was able to increase sales of our A2 machine by 10% by implementing a customer follow-up program. I did that in 3 steps. First, I analyzed our data looking for opportunities to increase sales. I noticed that if a customer didn't buy in month 1 and we followed up in month 2, we often got the sale more often than with a cold customer. That suggested it was worth switching efforts to those second calls. Next, I looked at the salespeople who got those sales and I asked them how they approached those calls, and I synthesized what they told me into a little script. Finally, I practiced on my own customers. Once I had a result, I increased my sales by 10%. I recommended the process to the rest of the team, and the whole team increased their sales too.
Yeah, you could not do that. It's next to impossible to provide that concise and informative answer without practice. Maybe that's not fair. I say you can't do it because maybe people can, but I certainly couldn't. And what's more, that answer demonstrates other skills and abilities that an employer would be looking for. There's the new idea, the analysis, there's communicating and working with a team, there's process development and customer relationships. And all of those things go into that answer and kind of demonstrated as a side effect of what this person did. So if you want your answers to be as valuable as possible, to show as much as possible, even though it's a kind of side effect like this one, then you have to practice. You have to have thought about it ahead of time. In the interview series, we have something called the general store exercise, and we go through resume accomplishments and we write down all of the things that it could demonstrate. So that if this person went into an interview and instead of saying, tell me about a significant accomplishment, maybe the person would say, tell me about a time you improved a process. And you could use the same answer, maybe tweaked a little, for that. But you have to, again, you have to have thought about that ahead of time. You have to have thought, okay, this answer is about increasing sales, but it also demonstrates these 5 other things. And so if you want to get the maximum use out of the accomplishments you have to do the forward planning. And if you're interested in the interview series, go onto the website under products, interview series. There's a whole bunch of things you get, as well as how to use your interview answers to the best ability or to the best advantage.
Okay, so we're ready now. We've got our bullet. We've practiced it. We've got our resume ready. And we're thinking about the future. And we're also going to just highlight for you guys, we don't want to forget the present, right? We don't want to forget about what we're doing, what's right in front of us right now. We're going to talk about that because the single biggest resume improvement is results in your present role, which really means that even though we are thinking about the future, we need to concentrate on our present state, the work that we're doing for our organization, how we can continue to grow and increase revenue and decrease costs and things like that through our current day-to-day tasking, right? What are those things that we could do every day in order to help our organization? And thankfully, those things will contribute to our resume, but it's a mistake to be overly focused on the future.
I can think of 25 projects that I really wish I could do that I'm interested in. And I think, oh, I could go play with that data and see what that tells us about X, Y, and Z. And they would be valuable projects to do, but I don't have time to do those and do all the things I'm supposed to be doing right now. And so I have to put them away, and it makes me a little bit sad because I wish I could do them, and I wish I could put them on my resume because they'd look really good. Not that I ever need a resume ever again, but I hope. But there are things that you wish you could do that would look really good, and doing them would mean that what you are supposed to be doing right now would be neglected, and we really don't want you to do that. So we want you to look for opportunities to achieve measurable results that will stand you in good stead, that are good things for the next role you want, but we don't want you to forget that you have goals for this year. You have meetings to go to, you have emails to answer, you have relationships to work on, you have a network to keep warm, and all of those things, we don't want you to neglect those things for something you're doing for the future. It always makes me think of the ant and the grasshopper fable, I guess, that Mark always tells, which I now can't remember, something about the ant puts away food for the winter and the grasshopper doesn't, and so the grasshopper's hungry at the end of summer. Is that it?
Yeah, the ant is prepared. He's stocking things. He spends the whole summer working, and the grasshopper makes fun of him for not reveling in the summer. And at the end, the grasshopper is sad. It's so sad. It's such a helpful fable, I guess, which of course fables are, but it always strikes me. Yeah. So we say, don't forget the ant. Don't be the grasshopper.
Don't be the grasshopper. Be the ant. So having an improved resume in the year from now is really easy. It's easy because all you have to do is follow these steps. You need to do a little bit of thinking about what it is, where I am now, what it is I want to be doing in a year. What opportunities do I have to learn those skills and get that experience? How do I measure it so that I know that I can prove that I'm good at something, and that thing that I'm good at is actually valuable to the company? Because there's a lot of things we're good at that aren't actually valuable.
Right.
And then we do a whole bunch of work to get that experience. And you have to do the thinking and you have to do the work, because otherwise it'll be a year from now and you'll be like, my resume is the same as it was last time, and I still have this dream of getting this other job, and I can't. So as Confucius says, the best time to start was 10 years ago, and the next best time is now. So start now, but don't forget to do your day-to-day stuff too. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Wendy.
If you've been a listener and believe our content would be a great fit in your large organization, yet realize the challenges of having over 500 managers, we may have a solution for you. Leverage your current training staff to deliver our content internally. We'll teach you how to deliver our guidance such that you can work with your managers when it's most optimal. We've created a licensing model that allows for large groups of managers to receive all of our standard trainings: Effective Manager, Effective Communicator, and Effective Hiring Manager. To learn more, contact maggie@manager-tools.com.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with something new.